Dirt and Sprague.
It's not a foregone conclusion that we will expand either in one city or both cities, but what we've told all interested parties is our anticipation, our board will make a decision by the end of this calendar year.
Andy Dirt Johnson, Brendan Sprague.
1 minute to go in game one. Wemby just bounced it off his shoe. Turnover San Antonio. Hart's got it. He'll dribble. 55 seconds to go. It's a two-possession lead. Big turnover by San Antonio. Brunson holding up high against Vassell. Now cuts to the left. Free throw line. Hops back. Digs in, shot up, and good!
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
All right, 6:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. Hello. Golly, Miss Molly. Happy Thursday, everybody.
What
Hello.
Is happening?
This week.
It's flying on by, man.
It really is.
Crazy what happens when you're having fun. You get good games. Look at that. Looking ahead to stuff. It's living up to the hype. The week's just flying on by.
It is nice to have all of this stuff to go on to guide us through this time of year.
Without a doubt it is, dude. Everybody's got to have their northern star, right? Their forward point that we're looking forward to. And so far, championship-wise, 2 for 2.
2 for 2.
2 for 2.
2 for 2.
Don't let us down, Stanley Cup. Yeah. We're counting on you. Fill my hole tonight.
We're going to have, there's going to be some non-hole filling.
You don't know
There's going to be a dud in the
We could
series.
Have seven-game classics in both the Stanley Cup Final and the NBA
could
Finals.
Could you imagine if we did?
Be pretty damn cool, wouldn't it?
What was the last Stanley Cup NBA Finals combo package of great seven-game series at the same time? Now you can fill my hole looking that up.
I will try and discover. When was the last time we had a seven-game series in the Stanley? 2 years ago, right? Stanley Cup Final?
The Panthers. Yeah.
Edmonton came back and forced a game. Game seven.
Now they were down 3-0. That's right.
And they won, or they lost game seven.
How is it? We're all believers in momentum because, you know, we've actually played sports.
Yes.
Isn't it kind of crazy? We've had the Celtics did this a couple years ago. You mentioned Edmonton. It's always a little nuts to me when the team comes back from 3-0 to get to game seven and just can't
get over the hump.
Like that one game. Like, yeah. The other team has mentally kind of been broken a little bit. They've let them in. It's 3-3 now.
Right.
All the pressure is on the 3-0 lead team. And for some reason, that 3-3 tie can't provide the first three outside of the Red Sox and Yankees.
It rarely happens. I think it's happened a handful of times in hockey, but very rarely. It has not
happened. It has happened in hockey?
3-0 comeback has happened.
Okay. Like 3 or 4 times.
L.A., I want to say, when L.A. won their last cup, they were the last one to do it in like the first or second round of the playoffs. They were down 3-0.
That's crazy.
Won 4 in a row, went on to win the Stanley Cup. But it's been 12-ish years.
Yeah, well, last year we had the NBA Finals go 7 and the Stanley Cup went 6.
Yes.
But according to the AI bot here, the last time both the finals and Stanley Cup final went 7 games in the same year was 1994, which would have been the New York Rangers winning the cup.
Yes. And the Knicks losing in the finals.
And the Knicks losing to the Rockets, and that was the OJ chase.
That was the OJ chase.
That was coincidentally the last time the Knicks led.
I saw that there was some
the finals
really
was.
Funny posts on that yesterday. The last time they had a lead, and it was just a picture of the white Bronco driving away from the
now,
cops.
The Kings 3-0 thing, as non-hockey knower guy, was that the Luke Robitaille Kings? Are we going that far back?
The Luke Robitaille?
That's a name,
Rob
right?
Blake, Luke? Yes, you are correct.
You
Luke
are correct.
Robitaille. Look at Blue Line Brandon.
Yeah. The Jonathan Quick in. Kings.
Jonathan Quick.
Jonathan Quick was their
Quick.
Goalie, and he stood
Jason's
on his
brother.
Head. He went all the way to win a Stanley Cup final, basically
Rob
being dominant.
Blake was their main defender.
I remember those Kings.
Yeah. Kopitar was probably...
Kopitar.
Young Kopitar.
Yeah.
So, Brown, what was Brown's name?
Dustin Brown.
Dustin Brown would have been there. Yeah, dude, 2004 LA King names. That's how you captivate an audience at 6:04 in the morning. We've had some, that's a great stat on 1994 being the last one. Last year would have been good. Like, last year's Stanley Cup final was solid.
6-7.
6-7 on each side. 2016 was the last time we had, before that, a Game 7 in the NBA Finals. The Cavs and Warriors come back. And that year in the Stanley Cup, you had it go 6. So, I mean, that was a good year.
So last year and 2016.
In 2016, one went 7 and the other one went 6.
Yeah.
So that's, you know.
That's a good season. Those are good.
That's pushing it to almost the brink. Not fully the brink, but almost the brink. I'm going to go out on a limb. I think we get them both this year.
It'd be great if
we
did.
I think we're going to seven in both series.
Hot take.
Hot take.
What
right
if
out
we
of the
had
gate.
Two sweeps.
Oh, that would really suck. That would really. I'd be happy that the Knicks won, but that would suck. I don't want Vegas to sweep.
I don't want Vegas to
get
sweep.
Get out of here, Vegas. No. You don't need another cup.
It'd be kind of
right?
crazy if they did, though.
Let's that spread the love a little bit.
A 39-win team sweeping in the Stanley Cup.
They would not. If they did that, they would sweep their way through the conference finals and the Stanley Cup. They would go 8-0 in their two biggest series.
One of the best regular season teams of all time.
Like, what are we doing
what
here?
What is the combined record of the Hurricanes and the Avalanche, and they just go 8-0?
Don't lose a single game. Like, how is this what voodoo magic do you have over there? What did you figure out?
Delightful little Wednesday night. We got a beautiful Thursday show. I'm excited to be here. I had a little bit of a traffic jam, so I got in kind of late today.
We love a good traffic jam early what? In the morning.
Why is there a traffic jam at 5-ish in the morning on the east? Where was this?
Well, anytime you can have somebody pulled to the side of the road, we all have to go 4 miles an hour to look to see what's happening.
Oh, we have to check it out. You can't not check it out when you're driving by. It could be anything. There could be an alien on the side of the road.
Yeah, why would you go 45 past somebody who is safely on the shoulder when you can stop and not mind your business?
Right, make sure that you got to make sure they're okay.
Now, is this on a freeway or is this like on a
main before the freeway.
Arterial road or something?
Yeah. Well, it makes you feel any better. I got in today and found a molded banana in my backpack that who knows how long it's been in there for. Mm. So I'm dealing with that now. That'll be fun to clean out today.
I had
digging for something and I'm like, what is that gooey thing on the bottom of the.
My day starting with technical issues.
Hey, we're three.
I don't believe they are Odyssey technical issues, though. I think
we
ferreted it out.
It's not us.
This isn't us.
You're very good at being an ass, a royal ass kisser for this company and always blaming somebody else.
You know,
I'm not ready to say
stuff.
That.
Well,
probably
I went on
fault.
Three different Odyssey issued computers.
How many guests in the last 10 years have we messed up on the phone and we've always heard, it's not our fault.
Get the fuck out of
it's
here.
Their line. It's their line. It's their line. And then somebody comes in. We think we fixed the line
problem. It's probably on us.
And then every time on air, well, I don't think it's our fault. Just say it's our fault.
Be a company man. That's why he's got an Odyssey tramp stamp right there.
That's why he's going to be the last one to work
the
here.
The last one standing when the apocalypse hits. It'll be swag keeping the station on the air, man.
Or
somebody's got to do
or
it.
Or Italy's going to be so great. I'm just like, have fun,
not
boys.
Coming back. Not a chance. Your wife is not staying in Italy. She's
going to
bring her ass back.
You can't leave WCC women's basketball.
Dude, you can't.
You can't do it.
The only thing that gets you to a NCAA tournament is potentially the WCC Lady Pilots.
Here's the situation.
You ain't leaving that comfort.
You ain't walking away from that.
For what?
No chance.
Wine?
Come on.
In a beautiful, walkable village? Like,
delicious food? No chance.
Not a chance. You like, there's a part of you, you like to be miserable.
We think.
You like to be stressed. You operate on misery.
Ooh.
You're very good in that.
You think that fills his tank?
I think it's his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the...
Keeps him going every day.
Late email, Thursday email of next week is going to be a sponsored branded week, but he just found out late Thursday.
You got to turn it around for Monday.
Storm over. You can't send this late. Okay, I'll go home and make it. Don't do it again. I think he operates
well.
Really
we found
well.
Out Wednesday of this week, so we're making improvements.
This is my point.
Oh, geez. You had an extra day there.
Yeah.
I see your argument.
Why can't we just admit who we are?
If we had nothing to complain about, what would we talk about?
Exactly.
What would we converse about? If everything was great and working, we wouldn't have anything to talk about off the air.
The funny thing is when we talk about certain things, I yesterday learned a very not valuable lesson. I had a very weird experience. So on Wednesdays, I have to pick my daughter up from school.
Right.
Most times, she's taking the bus.
Right.
She prefers it anyway. She likes to listen to her music on the bus.
Yeah, put the headphones in, relax for a little bit.
So I go to her middle school to pick her up, and I got to take her to a class right after school's on Wednesday. So I pick her up, and I'm sitting at a stop sign, and it's kind of a busy intersection to try to get out of, right? So I'm kind of just sitting there waiting. And my window's down, the arm is out, and... All of a sudden, I hear like, hey, man, we love your podcast. And I didn't react to this. This is like, I'm looking forward,
You're
right?
You're looking ahead.
All of a sudden, hey!
Hey!
We love your podcast. And I kind of slow turn my head left.
Are you talking to me?
And I even looked behind me in my car. And I'm like,
is there somebody?
Me?
Who?
And it's an eighth grade kid. Say, Dirt Sprague! And I went,
wow, are we us. Big with the kids?
I went, what?
Are we in with the kids?
We listen to your show every day. And I was like,
Hell yeah, dude.
Pass it on, my man.
Let's go. Bring up the next generation. You're kinda like,
well, in class, what are we doing?
I have
what segments
no
are you
idea.
Listening to? Are we?
I had, you know, dude, I was so thrown off by this.
I'd like to apologize for all the bitches that I've said. I apologize for that. I did not mean to. It slipped out of my tongue.
I think sometimes they're talking like that as well, but I just wanted everybody to know.
Nothing's going to fill my hole tonight, I promise.
We're really big in the 14-plus demo.
Let's go, dude. That's how you cultivate the next generation of listener right there. Okay, that's big. That's what they tell you. You got to adapt or die. We should start doing TikTok dance. Do I need to dab right now? Should I dab?
I need to not do that.
I could dab if I need to. That's big with the eighth graders.
I need you to not
dab. Are they still dabbing?
They're
the kids, they're not dabbing anymore?
No.
Did 6 and 7 die? Are we still doing 6 and 7?
6 and 7 has actually died because at my last basketball spring session practice.
The parents started doing it?
We were keeping score and there was like 3 different, I think we lost like 6, 7. And I waited for the
pause. Here it comes. Here it comes.
Nothing.
Didn't do it, huh?
None of
them.
Just
died like that.
The last one, I jokingly said, eh?
That's probably what did it.
And the coach looked at me, and he kind of chuckled, and the kids literally didn't acknowledge it.
Didn't even react. Really?
Yeah, it's over.
It had to have been adults starting to do it.
Yeah.
Because nothing will kill a trend quicker than adults doing it.
Yes.
Because then it's no longer cool.
You're
it's
correct.
Like the idea of Facebook.
The minute it hits Facebook, it's done.
Yes. Like when we were on Facebook originally, it was nothing but college kids and young people.
Right.
And then your aunt's posting weird memes and you're like, I'm getting out of here, dude. This is making me uncomfortable.
Your uncle's falling for every story ever posted on the
internet.
You
see Jerry Allen died? No. I'm out. That's
you see
enough
Democrats
for me.
Are eating people in their communities right now?
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and log off now. You guys have a great time on Facebook. I'll see you later. Nothing kills a trend quicker than that. That's sad, man. The kids had 6-7 going for a while. That was a hell of a run for 6-7.
I was listening to a W fan on the way in because I wanted to hear the actual New York reaction to a nice game one, and they won, right?
See, it was over. We're going to sweep them.
And they were not doing Knicks talk, so I'm listening, and I'm like, damn it, dude, what are you doing? But, you know, they're 3 hours ahead of us, so they've probably done it all show.
Yeah.
But they were taking a pause, and they brought up this story of I missed this, but they said Jared Verse reportedly kind of bullied Dylan Gabriel.
At number 8. He wanted number 8.
And just took number 8. Like, he didn't ask him. He didn't pay him. He just showed up on the practice field of OTAs in number 8.
Said, I'm higher on the food chain than you. I'm going to go ahead and wear this number now.
The funny thing is they were saying that they're not sure that it's AI. And then one of the guys concludes, goes, well, even if it's AI, it's still a pretty funny story. And I just thought, that's going to be our entire society now.
I don't know if it's real or not, but we just did 20 minutes on it.
Might be fake, but, you know, it's still funny. It's like, well, it kind of matters if it's fake or real.
I mean, it does a little bit. Gives you a little more context. Did he actually steal a number from a teammate without asking?
Well, I haven't seen any of it yet.
I've seen a video of him on the practice field, and I did not watch the video, and nor did I care enough to, like, dive fully into the story. I just saw the headline and chuckled, and I thought, yeah, that makes sense. Versus a better player. Dylan Gabriel's not the starter this year because they're probably going to start Watson, and I don't know who the backup's going to be. So, yeah, your best defensive lineman like, wearing the number over a third-string quarterback makes a little bit of sense.
Like, everyone I'm seeing right now, just to use an example of the internet, I'm on Twitter right now, our show page, and I just typed Jared Verse 8, and all I'm seeing is a still image of Dylan Gabriel with a quote, no video, and then I see a Jared Verse photo, still image, no video, with a quote from an account called Football Crave.
That has to be real.
Is that 18,000 followers? It has to be real.
Of course.
It's got a blue check.
Funny story.
It's got a blue check.
I mean, if it's a blue check, it's a real person.
So I just like, I don't even know how to navigate the waters anymore of AI, and they're just getting better and better at it.
It's unbelievable. I don't know what, did Verse always wear 8 in college? Do you remember what number he wore in college?
I thought he wore number 8 at Florida State.
Because Gabriel did at Oklahoma and Oregon. He was not number 8 at UCF. I think he was 11 at UCF.
He was 5. He was number 5 in
Verse
college.
Verse was? Okay.
Yeah.
So they both had different numbers. I didn't know, because that's the one thing, you could wear a number at the end of your college career, but if that's not the number you wore the whole time, if you want to switch it, it's no big deal.
Are you somebody that, like, if you were a pro athlete, the number would be a big deal to you?
If I've worn it, if I'm Jared Verse, I get why it is. Yeah. If I'm a rookie, it's not quite as, like, once you get established,
well,
then I feel like it's different.
Yeah, because here's my take. I'm aiming to get a really popular number because I want to be bought out everywhere I go.
You want people to buy the jersey?
I want to be the guy that people look back, and if I was a pro athlete, and let's say I was a middle-of-the-road pro athlete, like they mentioned Landry Shamet last night. Like his eighth team, his seventh coach, whatever it was.
Good off-the-bench role player, though.
If I was a Landry Shamet of a sport, every place I go would have a different number with my name because I would hope to pick a number that somebody would want to buy out. 50 G's? There you go, dude.
You got it.
Take your number five.
You just get it.
75 G's? Number seven's yours?
Yeah. Pick number 23 in every market 23? You go to because somebody's going to want to eventually wear number 23.
Pick a popular number that you think is a good chance of getting paid for and then pay me on that.
That's a hell of a...
would be my strategy as a middle-of-the-road athlete who has a 10-year career on seven teams.
Shamet's not getting any endorsement deals. You know what his endorsement deal could be?
Selling
his number every market he goes to. Oh, yeah? Yeah, I got number one. You wanted to be one? Sorry. Yeah, it's going to take $750,000.
How did your index get so big? Dude, actually, it was just from selling a number from a football uniform.
You can't choose something random. You can't go with, like, number 74.
No.
Because if you come out with something like that, nobody's ever going to want it, and you're stuck with that number the rest of your career.
But also the other side of that is, do you think an athlete who has a number that's like Dylan Gabriel – he finds out on social media or an alert on his phone, and it goes, Jared Verse, trade of the Browns. Do you think he goes, ah, damn, he wears my number. He's going to get it because he's the better player.
I bet there's – if he really cares about being number eight, like, that depends. Like,
I mean,
not everybody
cares.
Well, not everybody takes their number quite as seriously, so I didn't know if that was – because some guys are unwilling to do it. Some guys will get traded, and the other player will say, no, it's not happening. This happened in San Francisco. Brock Purdy and Mike Evans, same number.
Yeah.
And they're like, no.
Yep, Mike Evans is number five, I think.
I'm the starting quarterback of the team. You're not getting the number out of this. I've been 13 my entire career. I don't care about you. I'm the face of the franchise. So some guys, it's a little bit different. I can't imagine Gabriel had that thought of, like, once Verse comes there.
I wonder if his agent did and, like, trying to say, hey, if he comes after number eight, this is what you're getting.
Well, what is
your negotiating tactic?
If I'm paying an agent, that's the sort of stuff I want the agent to be paying.
What does Shador do if he's number eight?
Good question.
Does he put up a fight?
Good question.
Yeah, he does. He's got to get out of bankruptcy.
That's brother. Shiloh.
That's Shiloh.
Shiloh's the one that's bankrupt.
$11 million in debt, that's Shiloh Sanders.
Oops. How is that possible?
I don't know.
$11 million in debt?
Charge it. That's how.
I mean, you know, he's got endorsements. He was making NIL money.
Shiloh Sanders?
Him and Shador were in a ton of endorsements together at Colorado. Yeah. You don't remember those the AT&T commercials they did together? They had a bunch. There was a Sanders moment.
What is that paying?
I mean,
that's not paying
$10 million. You shouldn't be bankrupt.
AT&T's probably giving him $400K for that.
How about we don't charge $11 million on a credit card?
How about that? That's certainly
Maybe that's a decent idea to start with and then just filing for bankruptcy to get out of it so you don't have to pay any of it off.
What's the closest?
Another swindle.
Athlete to another athlete where it does become borderline debatable if one athlete should get the number over the other. So one I thought, like, skill-wise for their positions. Now, one position's ultimately, I think, always going to win. But, like, if Josh Allen and Josh Allen became teammates, because Josh Allen Hines is actually a really good football player.
Yes, he is.
But Josh Allen is obviously a league MVP.
Josh Allen.
It's Josh Allen.
He's the Josh Allen. The other one's the other Josh Allen.
So maybe that's not even a good enough example.
Yeah, because Josh Allen would never change his number. Starting quarterbacks are bad comps. Like, elite starting quarterbacks in the NFL. How many times have we had an elite starting quarterback in the NFL change their number with the team that they're playing on?
Rodgers.
He changed it in Green Bay?
Well, he went from Green Bay to
We're not going to a new organization. That's different because I think 12 isn't Namath's number retired. I think that's why he couldn't wear 12.
And also with the Steelers, I think he's still number 8.
Right. Brady was always 12, right, everywhere
Brady
he went.
Brady was always 12, yeah.
So it was more of like in the same organization from one year to the next. Like, I started for 3 years and then I changed my number to 4 to 7.
Here's a good one. If Anthony Edwards got traded from Minnesota to Orlando, Who keeps number 5? Anthony Edwards or Paolo Banchero?
It's got to be Anthony Edwards. He's higher on the food chain.
But he's going to his team.
I know. He's going to the new team.
Right?
I feel like he would win the argument, though. That's got to be put up for a team vote. Who's the more real number 5? It's Anthony Edwards, man.
I'm trying to think of really good comps right now that are going on.
This throws me off every year in college football. Every year. Because half of the team every year will change their number. and you have to relearn who players. Oregon had, I can't even
who
remember
how many.
Who
changed their number to Oregon?
Oh, there's a dozen guys who did it. Wide receivers did it. Corners did it. I can't remember all of them off the top of my head, but I remember there being like a, when spring football, when the roster was announced, and it's like, by the way, here's all the new guys. And it'll take me 2 weeks next year to be like, oh, that's right. He's number two now. Okay. Totally forgot about that one. This happens all the time in college. It's just guys, they get in as freshmen. You're not getting the number you want because somebody higher on the food chain than you has that number. Now, all of a sudden, you're a sophomore or you're a starter or you're coming back as a junior. And you're saying, I want a new football number. So I'm changing it up.
Yeah, the number debate is a very interesting one. I don't know if this verse Gabriel thing is real. I thought it was funny how everybody was like, even if it's AI, who cares? It's funny.
Who cares?
Here's a good one. Mello or Roy for seven?
Yeah, we never let him wear seven.
He is
Carmelo Anthony,
the all-time better player.
Yes, he is.
I hate to say that.
Yes, he is. Well, far more accomplished in his career than Brandon Roy, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Who could have maybe got there but couldn't stay healthy.
The age-old debate of a number. We have a lot to get to today. Some fun stuff. Great game one in the NBA Finals. And let's just start there. Game one, NBA Finals goes to the New York Knicks. My bank account thanks you for that.
Hello.
And a delightful game. We'll start there. Dirt and Spray, good to be with you on this Thursday edition on 105.1 The Fan. Beautiful little Thursday morning. It's a Magic Hat Thursday. You got your Magic Hat ready?
I got my Magic Hat ready.
I'm still noodling. I got a list of things. I got to whittle it down to which ones I want to keep.
Yeah, what's segment worthy and what's not segment worthy.
We'll get to that in the final hour of the radio program. But last night, game one, NBA Finals. And it goes to the red-hot New York Knicks, 12 straight playoff wins now, and their margin of victory was 10, so the point differential continues to climb.
Remarkable.
But if you saw the score, didn't watch the game, that is not how the game actually went. It's a good start, I thought, for the game for the Knicks. In the first quarter, Spurs responded, took the early lead. Knicks battled back, got a tie game at the break.
Mm-hmm.
No, that wouldn't have been right. No, they were down 7.
Yeah, 66-50, or somewhere in there, 55-49, somewhere like that.
But then it was a tie game at the end of the third quarter going into the fourth quarter, and so we had a really good game. We have a lot of thoughts on it, but just your initial reaction to the New York Knicks going on the road and beating San Antonio in game one.
Could not have asked for a better start to the NBA Finals. You couldn't. The game was compelling from start to finish. Right out of the gate, it was kind of low scoring, ugly defensive. San Antonio got hot at the end of the first quarter and is, to your point, separated a little bit. And there was a moment there in the third quarter, Brunson was doing nothing offensively. They couldn't get anything going. Cat was probably their best player at that point. And they're down by 14 in the third quarter, and you're like, man, You're like, you're encroaching on dangerous territory here. And New York found a way to go on a run, largely sparked by them sitting Wemby. I think the start of the third quarter, if I remember on the graphic they showed on the broadcast, they were like 1 of 8 with Wemby on the floor. They sit Wemby. New York starts attacking. They can go to the paint, finish around the rim. They get this comeback going. And San Antonio just really struggled offensively in the fourth. But I think in terms of outcomes, it was the best-case scenario for the league. For some out there that had the opinion San Antonio is going to steamroll the finals, that's now out the window. I still don't know where
they
it goes.
Still, they could win 4 straight
They very
games.
Well could, but I just like the idea that this was not going to be a competitive finals. Mm. I just didn't buy into it. And I think that goes a little bit out the window with them winning game one on the road. And you get a game that comes down to, what, 2 minutes to go that's basically tied or a slight lead for New York with big clutch buckets that are made coming down to the wire. Like, of all the things you could have asked for, it wasn't game one OKC-San Antonio. That bar is way too high, getting a double overtime game. It was compelling. It was entertaining. You had big shots made late. You had role players step up. Like, it checked all the boxes for me. The atmosphere was great. Knicks fans were everywhere. It was a fantastic game one last night.
Yeah, I got to admit, man, I don't know what the percentage was. That was a little shocking
how many Knicks fans
did get in that building. Now, I understand the economy blows, so people probably made a lot of money on those tickets selling them on the secondary market. I saw the Spurs before game one. The organization was vowing to crack down on the secondary market and punish people if they caught them, and I'm like, yeah, good luck with that, dude.
Yeah, have fun.
So I guess I shouldn't be shocked people turned and made thousands and thousands of dollars of profit, but like, every time the Knicks got like a little surge, it just felt so loud in that building. And that's a great fan base.
It is a very strong fan base with a great home court advantage.
Which, you get a team like the Knicks. I was trying to think of sports teams right now. I can't think of a team bigger in all of sport that needs to win the championship.
Yeah.
There's not one. In fact, I started wrestling with a bunch of stuff, and I don't think that the series is over. I'm not trying to conclude the Knicks are going to win the series. I picked them to win it, but, you know, it's a game one, and it was back and forth, and let's see what happens in, going forward.
Yes.
But I was kind of going to a place of so the Knicks haven't won the title since 73.
Mm-hmm.
Is it more impressive to win the title at a big-time city spot that hasn't won the title in a long time, or win the title for an irrelevant franchise that nobody cares about and doesn't have a winning reputation?
Like Cleveland and LeBron James,
right? Yeah, I was thinking about
or
that.
Or Steph and Golden State, who didn't have any, you know, since yes. the 1950s had essentially no history. I think the more memorable ones will probably still be the bigger market. Like if Brunson is able to do this, and he does that in the fourth quarter three or four
of
more
a
times, like
game.
Of like a game six of the NBA Finals at yeah. Madison Square Garden, and he has 15 in the fourth quarter and single-handedly carries them, it feels like late in the game. That, to me, the other players are more memorable because they're better players. Like Steph and LeBron are higher on the pantheon than Jalen Brunson is.
Right.
But that title we will remember. It's no different than like if you get a, you know, if it's Dak or somebody else in Dallas and he has 400 yards in a Super Bowl. Like it means a little bit more when there's a certain logo on the side, and I'm with you with the Knicks. It's awesome seeing him in the NBA Finals. I don't have animosity towards them because they've been irrelevant my entire life. They haven't won anything my entire life and been in a final since 1999. So they've been out of sight, out of mind for a very long time, mainly just a punching bag for NBA fans. So it's kind of cool to see their diehard fans have a little bit of fun last night and take over San Antonio.
Well, you know, when Dylan Harper came in and he instantly injected this life into San Antonio.
It was a sluggish start offensively, and he came in the fourth quarter and was like, here, let me take over.
Yeah, he kind of carried him there yeah. for a brief moment, and he kind of helped elevate him to a point where when they went into the half, I was texting with some buddies, and I agree. One of my friends was like, if I'm the Knicks, you got to feel great only being down seven.
That did not play good.
That did not feel like a very good half of basketball, and it also didn't feel like you should have been within 10, let alone seven. So I agreed with that takeaway. And then the third quarter. So the two things in two areas, I mean, there's a lot to get to with this game. But so the big thing I thought in San Antonio, Oklahoma City, that we may or may not have mentioned, the start of almost every single game in that series, even if it didn't end up going the Spurs' way in the final outcome, every start of that series, it seemed to be Spurs out front big. There was a 15-0 start. I think that was game three. That was the one Oklahoma City came back and won.
Yep.
Game seven was kind of one of the rare. They came out strong, and they never really gave up the lead much.
No.
Kind of controlled most of their way through game seven and won the series. And so I was really curious to see how the game would start. And even though the Knicks lost the first quarter by eight, I felt it was really important for them to not let San Antonio do what San Antonio did to Oklahoma City and go out 9-0,
yeah.
10-2, 11-2, a timeout, Knicks. They came out the gate, and they were the ones that kind of punched the Spurs in the mouth, and Wemby kind of settled things down for them, got a couple quick buckets, and they ended up, you know, being all right in the first quarter. But it's little things like that in this series, and there's a lot of them, that I think if the Knicks are going to win, it's little things like that that I think they have to have the advantage or edge in of, like, don't come out flat.
Right.
The Spurs love to come out the gate and jump on you double digits early in the first quarter. You don't want to have to try to come back. Now, they did come back from 14 down last night, but it's little stuff like that dirt in this series that I am keeping my eye on. We mentioned offensive rebounds, mm-hmm. Rebounds in general, the start of the games in general. Like, it's all of those things that I'm tabbing down to see, like, how this goes throughout the series.
Well, and I think you focus on, for me at least, when you talk about the little stuff and the, you know, around the margins kind of plays. One of the best players on the floor last night, and if you just looked at the first two lines of his box score or three lines of his box score, you wouldn't say it. I thought Josh Hart was incredible last night.
He's their best plus-minus player. He's a plus 22. He's phenomenal.
Dude, late in the game, how many times did it feel like in the last 6 minutes he had one where he stripped Fox tried to cross him over, and he picked his pocket and led to a possession the other direction. He had a massive defensive rebound at one point amongst all the trees in the paint. He was the guy that came down with the rebound. He had big offensive rebounds. He had a play where he deflected a ball and led to an offensive rebound for somebody else. Like, there were just so many little moments. You look at it, well, 27 minutes and only 3 points, and then you add in, oh, by the way, 15 rebounds, 6 assists, and 4 steals.
Yeah.
It's just that's the one thing about the Knicks that I genuinely enjoy, and it's not that San Antonio might win the series. Who knows where it goes from here?
Yeah, the series is not over.
It just, there's an appreciation for them of, they're not the deepest team in the world. Shamet's been great for him in the playoffs, and he had another great game. We were wondering, would the shooting continue, and it did last night. Not at 90%, but he was great.
Yeah.
Hit a big one late in the fourth quarter. I love the way the roster's built. I just, like, it's just the mixture of players where, and we knew this about Hart when he was in Portland, like, he's the perfect kind of guy to have as a role player on a championship team.
He's an all-time role player.
He does all the little things that don't really stand out, but when you dig a little bit deeper into the box score, you're like, man, that guy had a massive impact on the game.
I can't remember the moment because some of these websites have eliminated some of the play-by-play stuff. I should have written it down on my show sheet, but it was late fourth. The Knicks had the ball, and I want to say it was an offensive rebound. Hart sprinted, and he saved it from out of bounds.
Yes, and tipped it back in.
Tipped it to Shamet, I think, and then Shamet got the ball to Jaylen, and it set stuff up. And then I think that's the same possession. Hart got it back and kicked it to OG Anunoby.
Who knocked down a three.
Who knocked down a corner three. And that was a possession to me. I'm like, yeah, dude.
Those
the Josh
little things,
Hart possession.
The little things that don't stand out but do stand out.
He's a maniac. He's absolutely somebody that when you look at building a team, you don't have to respect his 3-point shot. He was 0 for last night. He's not somebody that I think is going to.
He'll have one game in the series, I'm sure, where he's like 5 of 7. You're like, where did that come from, Josh Hart?
But you're not overall really that scared of what his offensive game is. It's just the motor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we use it.
Doesn't stop.
We use it for white guys all the time.
Slapping the floor.
The gym rat. The high motor guy.
That's exactly what Josh Hart is.
That's actually Josh Hart in the NBA. Yeah. And man, last night was it crucial with his 15 boards. You mentioned the 4 steals.
4 steals were huge.
Hands are active.
Had a block to go with it too, by the way.
I think that's the other part of this too, going in for me in the series. Because I think San Antonio can still make some adjustments. Some guys can play better. Like, Fox needs to play better.
Yeah, he had a rough
game. Wemby had a pretty terrible game from his standards, right?
Yes, he did. 6-21 from the floor.
The thing about the Knicks that I liked going into the series is, one, I loved everybody falling into the, well, it's the East, so here's the take. Instead of looking at the Knicks and how they play and who their culture guys are and the chemistry they have developed the last couple years, like, that was an element of New York. And, oh, by the way, they were playing really good basketball. And I think, what did Breen say on the broadcast? They played 8 games in 23 days.
Yes, because they swept each of their last
two
series.
That is an insane amount of rest for a team at this stage of the season.
And San Antonio is coming off a 7-game
slugfest. Yeah. So, like, that was the element of the Knicks that I liked the most, is it's an entire team of Josh Hart's. Now, some guys have different roles, but OG, who I thought played scared at the beginning of this game, and I thought Wemby kind of got in his head.
And then got going in the second half a little bit and knocked down that big three that you were talking about.
Cat, who I want to talk about in the next segment, because, oh my God, what a game. You mentioned Shamet, Brunson. Like, everybody has their role, but it's an entire team of Josh Hart's. They will all do whatever it takes to make the play that matters.
Well, and then you're in a situation as a team that if you can just find a way to get yourself in the game or be around the game in the fourth quarter, what do you have in your hip pocket?
You have one of the best
fourth quarter
closers
that we've seen in the history of the NBA. Like, statistically speaking, he is on the Mount Rushmore of the best clutch players in the NBA.
Did you think that last shot was like a glitch in the Matrix?
How did he make that?
How he shot that?
It was. I mean, there was no foul called, which I'm kind of like, all right, I guess let him play. And then he's fading away, bumping into the guy's chest.
I thought they got away with some stuff. I didn't think the Knicks got a good whistle last night.
Well, and I thought that was a good point. Like, Brown talked about that after the game, where he said we were focusing early in the game way too much with the officials. What was the discrepancy at halftime? They had like two attempted free throws, and San Antonio was at like 15 or something.
I mean, they had doubled them up most of the way through that game.
It was wild. And Brown was like, I think he credited Rick Brunson, and he said, Brunson told us all to sit down and shut up. Like, just go play.
Yeah.
Go play.
Because Jalen got in their face.
They were getting into it.
On.
They were arguing. They were complaining. And it was like, man, let's play our game. And in the second half, it ended up working out for him. Hell of a game one.
Great game one. I got a couple more things on this. Let's talk about who I thought really was kind of the hero of the game for them. I know Brunson's getting all the attention. He hit the shots. We just talked about Josh Hart. I want to talk about Karl-Anthony Towns. What a game from him. We'll talk about that coming up next on 105.1 The Fan. Welcome back in. It's 6:45 on your sports leader. Good morning.
Yeah, here we go.
Got some football to get to. Yesterday from the hearings, we ended up finding out about the media rights deal for the Pac-12.
We did, yeah. Let that one slip.
Yeah, and it's odd. I feel like people are dunking on the Pac-12, and then I feel like Pac-12 fans are trying to dunk back on people. Mm. I don't know how to view it, other than I don't think the number's very good. But
that's kind of the epitome of a no-dunk situation. Like, let's not make fun of the programs that did nothing wrong and got left behind, and also $12 million is not much to be dunking about. That's a no-dunk zone for me.
So we'll get to that today. Come on. You guys know I've been trying to do it almost every day since the playoffs have started and since our beloved Blazers have perished.
You got a Blazer segment for me today?
Oh, yeah.
You got a Blazer segment in there today?
Oh, yeah.
Buddy. I can't wait to find
buddy,
out what it is.
Come on.
I can't wait.
You think I'm sitting on that couch and not thinking about how the Blazers get into this? How are we not watching this high-level basketball and saying, God, I want us to be a part of this. This is so good.
I've been saying that my entire life.
I know, but
I love Mike Breen. He's great. I didn't think there was any air of like homerism last night. He's as pro as you could possibly be. He did have a line at the start of the broadcast, though, that I'm like, F you, Breen.
What'd he say?
The Spurs are back in the NBA Finals after 12 long years.
Oh, did he say long
years? Had to have been tongue-in-cheek, or it was just like, dude, really? Really?
Knowing him, it might be tongue-in-cheek.
Because the Knicks hadn't been in since 99, and they hadn't won a championship since, what, 73?
Well, he was on the Imus show years and years ago, and he was kind of the funny sports update guy. So he has a little bit of humor to him.
He was on Pardon My Take earlier this week, and they asked him if he would react to certain ladies sitting behind the Spurs head coach if they were shown on camera, and if he would say anything, and he said, no, I won't acknowledge.
Well, I'd love to tell you that I'm pretty confident that I did not see those ladies last night.
I did not see them last night.
But also my screen looked like it was from 1998.
Yeah, this is a whole thing that I could rant about probably for an entire segment. It's inexcusable for ABC and ESPN to do that. Inexcusable.
Now, we need somebody to correct this.
It is 100% correct. I will stand, what is the firm segment, 10 toes down?
No,
100%.
No.
It was 720p, not 1080p.
So there was no other option to change.
I didn't check Disney Plus, like ESPN Plus. I didn't check that route, so maybe if you're streaming it, you get a better quality, but why would the cameras be there for this? Their cameras wouldn't be any different.
I thought my internet was lagging the whole game because the quality of video I didn't think was very good.
You spent billions of dollars to get the rights to the NBA back. You're broadcasting the NBA Finals. This is not game 38 on a Saturday night of the regular season. This is the NBA Finals. They did the same thing, by the way, for the Stanley Cup Final the night before, because I double-checked that night as well. And if you watch game 7 or any of the Western Conference Final Series, guess what all of their games were in? 1080p.
Yeah.
ESPN will air random SEC games on Saturday nights on their 4K channel.
Yeah.
On their 4K channel. And for the NBA Finals, Knicks and Spurs were getting 720p. It's inexcusable for 2026.
Yeah, I thought I didn't want to bring it up on a text string. I didn't want to complain. It's like, maybe it's my internet. And
no, it was
not. You guys
not.
Like, oh, my picture's great.
No, so. I had the same thing, and I was checking every way I could to change it. You could not change it. 720p was as high as you can go. We didn't talk about the guy running on the court either.
we haven't gotten to that guy either.
Guy running on the floor.
How about Wimby smiling in the video, though?
The funny thing is,
he's in the camera phone, and
so the video has been released. Like, somebody who follows him on social media said, here's the video that he took.
Oh, he's probably live when he did it, I imagine.
Yes, you can't even see Wimby.
Because he's too tall?
The video cuts off. It,
how
like, spurs on the jersey. He's holding the phone right here, and you can't see his head.
Can you see Mitchell Robinson?
I'd have to go back and
Mitchell
watch.
Robinson had, like, a, what's going on here face. Like, he had kind of a puzzled look, which, by the way, Mitchell Robinson, another good Nick. He was really good for them last night, despite having a broken pinky.
Yes, he was.
And I agree with this one from the homie Ray. I do think Hart is kind of the Rodman.
Yeah, that's
he's not
going
to marry himself.
Right.
You know what I mean?
He's not going to do
cocaine and then fly back for the game. But
although if you find your way to Carmen Electra, I won't be mad at you.
Nobody can fault you for that.
No.
But he, yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. He will do all the other things that you need him to do. But I thought, now I know that his points wasn't the highest on the team, and Brunson, look, Brunson's going to get all the attention today, and he should. He was awesome in that fourth quarter. Those shots he hit,
yeah,
remarkable. We already know that about him. There was a guy playing last night that I personally, I think his reputation has been way overblown. Mm. I think how people view him is way too extreme. And I thought he was their player of the game because there were large stretches of that game where they looked lifeless. Brunson wasn't hitting shots.
No.
OG Anunoby looked like he was playing scared. Mikal Bridges only shot the ball six total times. And Hart couldn't hit any shots from the field. I thought Karl-Anthony Towns was the player of the game last night for them. I really did. I thought he was their best player. I thought what he did on the court for them in those stretches of no offense, bringing Wimby out. We talked about that. I said, look, this is how you counteract Wimby. You stretch the floor. Karl-Anthony Towns was driving past him. He was being aggressive. Mm-hmm. He was active on the glass. He ended up with, what did he get, 12 rebounds in the game.
Like 12 boards, four of them offensive.
I thought Karl-Anthony Towns was the player of the game last night.
He tied, Vassell was the only other one with four offensive rebounds in the game. So just to put in perspective where that number ranks, I'm with you. And I think it wasn't even just about, like 18 points won't jump off the page from a scoring standpoint, but the overall stat line did. And then there was a moment where they showed Wemby, we know how good he is defensively. Like when he's a primary defender, when he's on the floor, all the numbers and metrics are out there will tell you how it's nearly impossible to score on him and in the paint when he's on the floor. But there was a moment, I want to say late in the third quarter, where they showed a graphic where it was basically Wemby as the primary defender and then Cat as the primary defender on the other side. And the numbers were almost identical in terms of nobody was really scoring on either of them.
Cat held Wemby when he guarded Wemby was 2 of 12 in the game.
I mean, that's a
12.
Huge number, man.
Yes.
That is a massive number. And so it's one of those things for me as a, you know, not a diehard living in the bubble of NBA basketball year-round. When I think of Karl-Anthony Towns, I think of one of the best, you know, big shooters we've ever seen. A little bit goofy, but like, man, take a 7-footer who can knock down threes any day of the week. I don't think of him as a dominant defender. I don't think of him as somebody who would have that level of impact on the other end of the floor. And so he did last night, and that was a massive part of that win for them because we knew Wemby was going to do it on one end. The question was, can somebody do it on the other end? And Karl-Anthony Towns did.
Well, all I heard about in the lead-up was OG Anunoby is going to be the primary on Wemby. So when
which
they
he
came
was kind of at
Hart guarded him
game.
A lot too. Like
yeah,
Hart was
they,
on
they,
quite
they
a
when they came
guys.
Out in the few opening possessions, and it was Cat on Wemby after they did whatever high pick and roll or screening action, and he ended up and he looked like he was intent and focused on it. If he can guard Wemby straight up without double teams for 20 to 25 minutes out of the game, look, you're going to have to rotate. And Wemby, we know Wemby's effectiveness after somewhere between the 25 and 30 minute mark of minutes played. When he goes over 30, we start to see him fall off.
He had moments of looking exhausted, but he also had that late stretch push where he gave him the lead and then the Knicks finish on 11.
And then he dribbled the ball off his foot on one of the final possessions.
ESPN stats and info. So when Towns was the final defender on Wemby in a possession, overall the Spurs only scored 0.64 points per play.
Yep.
They shot 29%.
Yep.
And they were 2 of 16 from 3.
Yeah.
It allows all the other Knick defenders to get closer to the three-point shooters, so they have contested threes. And if they can do that, it's going to be the Spurs are going to have to do something drastically different.
Yeah, here's Mike Brown on Karl-Anthony Towns last night.
He was amazing. I mean, the double-double was huge. He came up with some timely buckets for us. He's a problem. You put a small guy on him, he's got a chance to offensive rebound. You put a big guy on him, he's got a chance to pick and pop and go around guys. So we got to just keep trying to move him around based on who's guarding him throughout the course of the ball game. But he was huge for us with his double-double.
I thought it was pretty evident from the start. Like, he's pretty locked in. He shouted out his mom who passed away and said it felt like she was watching over. He felt like a kid again. Like, it's really
I love that
post-game
quote.
He's great, man. Like, he's a really likable dude. He gets kind of labeled a goofy, non-winning player thing, and I've always thought that was ridiculous. He's not perfect. He was effing awesome last night. But there was a moment pretty early, Wimby was guarding him, and I thought he was kind of exposing elements of it. Not that he's better than Wimby, but he was getting around him, he was being aggressive, he was dictating, he was passing, right? And I literally text my group chat, because I got a couple Knicks fans in there, and I'm like, they have to take Wimby off him and put him on Hart. He can't guard him.
No.
He takes Wimby too far out, and that just opens everything up for the Knicks. I thought they exposed that. And literally after the timeout, what did you see? Wimby came out of the timeout guarding Hart.
Switch it up.
Because he can't guard him for most of the game. It's too hard of an ask to guard that guy from the perimeter who you know can shoot it. And, oh, by the way, be the help defender when Champagne can't stay in front of Jalen Brunson. So I thought for all the Brunson shot stuff, and he was awesome last night in that fourth quarter, my player of the game really was Karl-Anthony Towns, which is what I want to kick off the second hour with.
Do we have our Karl-Anthony Towns?
We should.
Oh.
And I'll tell you how.
Yong Hansen.
Well.
Yes.
No.
Are we calling him Chinese Towns? Is that his new nickname? Got a new nickname?
He just called Chinatown.
Ooh.
Drop the S. Chinatown. No. Hour number two. We'll talk a little Blazers from the NBA Finals. Got a loaded second hour. Dirt and Sprague on 105.1 The Fan.